Welcome to Brushstrokes of Being podcast, where I tell the stories of art, artists, and have conversations with people in the arts. I am Karin Merix, your host, and I am an artist, art historian, cultural philosopher, teacher, and mentor. There are books that speak, and there are books that breathe. Welcome to this episode of Brushstrokes of Being, the book that breathes wisdom, and I frequently turn to as artist, but also for the wisdom, is Charlie Magazine's The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse. This is one of those rare works that seem to exhale light with every turning page. It is a book that does not announce itself loudly. It whispers. Its sentences are small, its drawings humble, yet between ink and silence something ancient stirs. A reminder that art can still be an act of tenderness in a restless world. Before the words, there is the line. Open the book and you meet not a slick illustration, but a trace of a living gesture. The ink bleeds, trembles, occasionally falters. In an era of factor precision, this human imperfection feels almost radical. Magazine's line remembers that it once passed through a wrist, a pulse, a heartbeat. Art history gives us a lineage of such vulnerable mark-making. Rembrandt's late drawings, Blake's illuminated manuscripts, Klee's dancing lines, Cocteau's single-stroke faces, all understood the line as thought made visible. It was never mere description, it was revelation. Magazine joins this lineage not by imitation, but by intuition. His marks hover between control and surrender, as though he trusts the ink to know more than he does. The result is a visual theology of touch. Each line says, I am here, and I'm imperfect, but I am alive. In a culture that edits everything smooth, that confession of aliveness becomes revolutionary. Within these luminous pages wander four beings, a boy, a mole, a fox, and a horse. On the surface, a child's fable. Beneath, an interior symphony. The boy is innocent, the open consciousness that still asks without shame. He is our phenomenological eye, the gaze that experiences before it categorizes. His questions? What do you think success is? Or what do you think is the biggest waste of time? Are so disarming because they recall the ancient Socratic art of wonder. The mole, small and earthbound, represents appetite and curiosity. He loves cake. The detail is comic, but also sacramental. In loving sweetness, he accepts embodiment. He reminds us that joy is not opposed to spirit. It is spirit in matter. Through him, Magazine reconciles body and soul. The fox is silence and shadow, a creature of wounds. He rarely speaks. His presence itself is the lesson. In Jungian terms, he is the scared part of the psyche that has learned mistrust. Yet, his loyalty and quiet courage tell us that healing does not always announce itself in words. And then the horse, serene, immense, the elder self. When he confides, The truth is, everyone is just winging it. He dismantles the myth of mastery. When the boy asks, "What is the bravest thing you've said?" "Help," said the horse. Or, "Nothing beats kindness. It sits quietly beyond all things." These sentences fall like brushstrokes of grace, simple, but carrying the weight of centuries of spiritual teaching. Together, they form a symbolic quartet, four movements of one inner life. The boy's openness, the mole's desire, the fox's fear, and the horse's wisdom. The journey they take is not geographical, but psychological, a pilgrimage towards wholeness. What surrounds them is as vital as what depicts them. A magazine leaves acres of paper untouched. His compositions breathe with emptiness. That white space is not background, it is silence. It is the pause in music, the held breath before revelation. In classical drawing, the void often served composition. Here it serves contemplation. The viewer contemplates the image internally. We are not passive observers, but co-creators. In phenomenological terms, meaning arises between the viewer and the page. This aesthetic of incompleteness recalls both Eastern and Western spiritual art. The unpainted fields of Zen ink, painting the broken halos of medieval illumination, even Turner's dissolving atmospheres. Each trusts the unfinished mark to evoke rather than describe. Magazine's drawings participate in that sacred tradition of suggestion, art that opens rather than closes. To speak of kindness as an artistic principle may seem naive in a postmodern world trained to value irony and critique. Yet Mackesy's work proves that sincerity can be avant-garde. His pages practice what I would call the aesthetics of compassion. Where modernism often sought distance, he chooses proximity. The tenderness of his line refuses cynicism. Levinas wrote that ethics begin in the face of the other. Mackesy gives us four faces, not of strangers, but of mirrors. Each creature is an invitation to empathy. In one of the book's most resonant exchanges, the horse says, "Sometimes just getting up and carrying on is brave and magnificent." Within that sentence lies an entire philosophy of vulnerability. Courage in this world is not domination, but connection. To ask for help and to have the courage to get up and carry on is to affirm interdependence, the deepest truth of existence. Seen through Martin Buber's I-Tao lens, every encounter in the book becomes sacred dialogue. The boy's questioning, the mole's offering of cake, the fox's silent presence, the horse's steady wisdom, each is a moment of relation where being meets being without defense. In that relational space, art turns ethical. Ink as breath, image as meditation. If you look closely at any page, and you will see the rhythm of breathing. The ink thickens and fades like inhalation and exhalation. Mackesy draws as though meditating, a gesture followed by listening, a mark followed by stillness. In this, he joins the long conversation between drawing and contemplation. The Benedictine monks who illuminated manuscripts understood that repetition of line could become prayer. So did the Zen calligraphers, who believed that brush revealed the state of the soul. Magazine's images carry the same spiritual pulse. There are less illustrations than visual mantras, reminders that presence itself is art. To create work this open requires extraordinary courage. Gentleness, after all, exposes. It resists the armor of intellect. When Mackesy draws the boy, resting his head against the horse's neck, he risks sentimentality. But what he achieves is sincerity. His courage lies in refusing the fashionable detachment of our age. The philosopher Theodore Adorno once said that to write poetry after catastrophe is barbaric. Mackesy suggests the opposite, that after catastrophe, poetry is necessary. His art appeared on the eve of a global pandemic and became unexpectedly a collective comfort. Millions saw in those fragile drawings a mirror of their own vulnerability. In this way, the book became a cultural phenomenon, not because of marketing, but because of it met a physic need. It offered permission to feel. It made gentleness visible again. Although Mackesy's style feels immediate, it carries deep ancestry. The spiritual humanism of Rembrandt, the visionary innocence of Blake, the quiet observation of Beatrix Potter, even the existential line of Giacometti, all echo faintly behind his pages. Each of these artists used the fragile body of line to explore the condition of the soul. From the perspective of art history, his work restores to illustration what William Blake once called correspondence, the marriage of image and word as equal partners in revelation. Mackesy's handwritten text flows through the drawings like a melodic counterpoint. Words becomes drawing, drawing becomes word. This unity recalls the medieval concept of the illuminated word, text that shines. Mackesy revives it for the 21st century, proving that illustration can again be contemplative art form. There is a moment, turning the pages, when you realize that nothing in the book truly ends. There is no plot, no resolution. Even the final image feels open. This incompleteness is not oversight, it is ontology. In Renaissance thought, completion signified perfection. In the mystical traditions, the Christian Sufi Zen, incompletion signifies life. So to remain unfinished is to remain becoming. Mackesy's art invites us into that sacred process. We are each sketches in divine ink, forever drying, never fixed. The philosopher Merleau-Ponty wrote that perception itself is unfinished, always falling back into the world. The same could be said of this book. It is an experience that continues long after you close it. Its wisdom does not instruct, it lingers. Why did the world embrace this quiet book so passionately? Perhaps because it answered the noise with stillness. Released in 2019, just before global isolation began, it arrived like a lantern in dusk. People were craving authenticity, touch, imperfection, all the qualities that digital life smoothed away. Mackesy offered the antidote in paper form. It also recentered the idea of the artist as moral voice, not moralistic, but moral in the ancient sense, a guide towards the good. In this way, the boy, the mole, the fox, and the horse performs a subtle cultural healing. It reminds us that art's highest purpose is not decoration or distraction, but connection. What then does this book teach those of us who make? First, that vulnerability is a form of mastery. To draw a trembling line with honesty is greater than to paint a flawless surface without soul. Second, that simplicity is the end, not the beginning, of sophistication. Macassey's apparent naivety is in fact refinement, the reduction of everything unnecessary until only truth remains. And third, that kindness can be an artistic methodology. To approach the subject, the viewer, the world with compassion is itself a technique, one that transforms both creator and witness. For the reader who is not an artist, or the listener who is not an artist, the lessons are the same but deeper. The book becomes a manual for living. Ask, listen, be gentle. Trust that love is not earned but recognized. As the final pages unfold, the companions move through open landscape, a field, a sky, a river rendered with barely more than a wash. There is no grand ending, only continuation. The horse tells the boy, "Don't measure how valuable you are by the way you are treated. Always remember you matter, you're important, and you are loved. You bring to this world things no one else can." And that might be the book's heart, in that he reconnects art with spirituality, wisdom. Both seek the same truth, to reveal that existence, even in the smallest gestures, is sacred. If I had to name what this book offers beyond its beauty, it would be permission to pause. In every field of ink, in every fragment of dialogue, Macassey gives us space to breathe. He restores the silence that our accelerated world has forgotten, how to hold. The art historian Abby Warburg once described art as a form of cultural memory, a way to remember how to be human. Macassey's work continues that mission. It remembers on our behalf how to ask gently, how to care, how to see the sacred in the ordinary line. When we close the book, we do not really leave it. Its images linger after, like after music. Perhaps that is because they echo something we already know but have long neglected, that being alive is in itself a creative act. The boy, the mole, the fox, and the horse is not a lesson in morality, but a mirror of possibility. It tells us that we can be both fragile and strong, both incomplete and enough. It asks us to live artfully, with awareness, compassion, and courage. For the artist, it whispers, "Create with kindness." For the thinker, it murmurs, "Let thought feel." For the wary human, it promises, "Even your small steps are magnificent." And so the ink dries, the silence expands, and we return to our own pages, ready, perhaps, to draw again, to speak again, to live a little more gently. I wish you a very peaceful and productive week. And remember, art is the cradle of your soul. Take care.